Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. At the top of the 6 o'clock hour, we'll have the E.F. Hutton of the Legal Commentariat, Andy McCarthy, on to explain his pronouncement over the weekend that he expects Trump to be indicted. But I want to start locally, because there's this fascinating story brought to us by one young upstart commentator, John Cass. Have you heard of this gentleman? Chicago
Cass
Tribune.
Cass John, you mean?
Friend of the show, talking about 13th Ward aldermanic race. No, I know this isn't, you know, if I don't live in the 13th Ward, why should I care? Well, Madigan runs the 13th Ward. Do you care a little bit more? Okay, hold on. Keep with us. It's a Southwest Side David versus Goliath story, writes Cass in the Tribune. The Goliath, obvious. Yeah. Madigan, his assistant in the 13th Ward, is 13th Ward Alderman Marty Quinn. And wait till you hear from Marty Quinn after I set up this story. This kid from DePaul, freshman from DePaul named David Krupa, who drives a forklift part-time while he's not at DePaul, circulated petitions to run for alderman.
That's awesome.
He said that I'm from Clearing. All I want to do is get on the ballot to address the serious issues we have, from public safety to taxes. People don't want to say things out loud here. People who've challenged the 13th Ward get intimidated. You know the neighborhood, said Mr. Krupa to Mr. Cass. And, of course, Cass does, because his father and uncle ran a grocery store in the ward.
Yeah, where is the 13th Ward?
Southwest Side.
Okay.
Krupa, this enterprising college kid, went out and got 1,700 signatures.
Good for him.
473 are required to get on the ballot. So, you know, more than four times the minimum required. Usually pretty safe. You know, the normal handle is get three times the required.
Yeah.
But then a crew of political workers went door to door with official legal papers asking residents to sign an affidavit revoking their signature on Krupa's petition as part of their ballot challenge.
Wait, is that legal?
Yes. Well, not the way they did it, but yes, it's legal. But if you think that somebody signed a petition for somebody else, then you can go to that person and say, did you sign this? And they'll sign an affidavit saying, no, I didn't sign it, or yes, I did sign it. This is customary in a ballot challenge. I've been part of these before. But the point is, say, if it looks like it was round-tabled, like did you see some of those petitions that were circulating where the penmanship is the same for all,
right, for all
the signatories on a particular page?
Yeah.
Right. Just a happy coincidence, I'm sure. But if you see something obvious like that, then you say, okay, well, I know John Smith at 123 Main Street, and I know he didn't sign this petition. I know that's not his handwriting, so I'm going to go to John Smith with an affidavit and say, I'm John Smith, I didn't sign this petition, and then that is entered into the record as part of my petition challenge to knock that signature off the count for to meet the minimum legal threshold. But that's not what happened here. What happened here is that more than 2,700 people, so more than the signatures that were actually filed, signed revocations. 2,700. He filed 1,700 signatures. 2,700 people signed revocations saying that I didn't sign the petition. And
think they're a little jumpy there, Marty Quinn's people?
Well, exactly. And Cass makes the point, revocations, legal documents, signed and notarized, lying on a legal document is a felony, can lead to a charge of perjury. That's true. So of the 2,796 revocations that were filed, only 187 matched actual signatories on Krupa's petitions. Only 187 people who signed David's petitions filed revocations. So his election attorney makes the obvious point. So what about the 2,609 people who didn't sign for David but who filed revocations? That's fraud. That's perjury. That's a felony. Chicago Tonight's Paris Schutz.
I just know the Ponces.
It doesn't matter.
And when that's, Carol Marine breezes in and out.
That's all you need to know. Yeah. No, really.
She's just here in between parties.
And by the way, Chicago Tonight is covering this only as a cover to feign even-handedness in their political coverage. So when you see other outlets picking up this story, and you will, remember, they're picking up this college kid versus Madigan to pretend they're not supportive of Madigan, to pretend they'll report the hard stories on Madigan. It's a misdirection play. They're in bed and on the team for every Madigan finance candidate from the top of the ballot down, as are all the Champagne Socialists and Lakefront Goo-Goos. So when your friends of the left wring their hands about Mike Madigan, tell them to go take a long walk off a long pier named Navy, because they're deluding themselves. If you are supportive of a Madigan finance candidate who reports to Mike Madigan, like, say, Marty Quinn in the 13th Ward, then you're supportive of Madigan. So we'll just end the charade now, won't we? But nonetheless, Chicago Tonight did catch up with Marty Quinn, the alderman, who's the beneficiary of Madigan's largesse in this case. And listen to what Marty Quinn had to say.
So I guess the better question is, as a self-described day one Trump supporter gets 1,700 signatures in the 13th Ward without being disingenuous? That's the question that comes to my mind. Have a good day, guys.
But it's Trump's fault. This whole thing is Trump's fault.
Trump. That's fantastic.
And Krupa is I mean,
he's a Trump supporter.
He didn't say Krupa is a Russian agent, but I think we can all surmise.
Well,
that
there's clearly going to be Russian collusion in the 13th.
There's no
court.
Question.
It's not if Dan, it's when. When he's driving that forklift.
David Krupa, freshman at DePaul University, obviously some kind of Manafort, Roger Stone, Carter Page stooge. The better question to ask.
I think he's hanging out with that female Russian spy with the red hair.
Maria Butina. Yeah.
Yeah, she's
not anymore.
Back to court, yeah.
The real question, according to Marty Quinn, is not what was done on his behalf. By the way, he's being represented in the case by Michael Casper, Madigan's attorney.
Oh, okay.
Cass asked for comment, and Casper said, I don't comment on pending litigation. Well, there is no pending litigation. You just don't comment because you're the consigliere to a crime boss. That's why you don't comment, Casper. You're no different than Cutler was to Gotti, Michael Casper. But okay, so just understand, the real question is not what they did and what was done on behalf of dutiful soldier Marty Quinn. It's that 19-year-old David Krupa, working his way through DePaul, is a Trump supporter. And so how did he get 1,700 signatures in my ward if he wasn't disingenuous? What does that mean, even?
I want to hear more from Marty Quinn.
Oh, yeah. Here's David Krupa, the Russian agent.
Well, it's not verifying their signature. It's effectively taking it off of my petition. I've had family friends that have known me my entire life who have signed one of those revocations for their precinct captain because they were told it was something that it wasn't, and they are furious.
It was fraudulent behavior. They lied and said, you need to sign this. Because it is intimidating when they come to your door, because I've had ward bosses and people come to your door and just like, what do I need to do?
Right. Just give me my garbage can. I'll do anything.
Please plow my street.
Yeah.
Please.
What they did is say,
what did they say?
Just need to confirm your signature.
Oh, sneaky little bees.
Well, felonious, but sneaky is a word that they would use, sure. Here's Krupa's election attorney, Michael Dorf.
Without looking at anything else, we know that there were at least 2,600 false affidavits filed. It's such overkill that wasn't necessary.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary. You know, can't you just win it straight up? Well, we don't want to just win it straight up. You see, we have to punish. We have to send a message that nobody dare run against us. Not even a 19-year-old freshman who didn't have a chance in hell of beating Marty Quinn.
Now I want to move to the 13th Ward and vote for Marty Quinn.
No kidding.
I mean, not Marty Quinn, vote for this 19-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Vote against him, right. Mark on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I grew up in Madigan's Ward. I know all the players involved. After they remapped it to make it more convenient for them, there's a lot of cops and firemen in that ward, and it's not hard to figure out that they most of them voted Trump. It's real simple.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Mark.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Well, we are about 30% away from our goal to feed 3,000 children for a year and give them clean water for life. It's part of our annual Food for the Poor campaign, helping those less fortunate this holiday season. And we really want to stress our business benefactor program. It's the best deal in all of Chicagoland radio. $2,500 tax-deductible donation as a way of saying thank you. We will give you 40 60-second commercials. So basically, the money goes to Food for the Poor, and as a way of saying thank you, we welcome you to the family by giving you 40 60-second commercials. I can voice them. Dan can voice them. It's really the best way to take your business to the next level, especially if you want to reach like-minded people like our listeners here at AM 560. To become a business benefactor, call Ann Jeanette. Dan, what is the number?
847-472-8951. 847-472-8951. Ann Jeanette is our sales manager. And again, thank you to many of the businesses who've signed up. All the businesses signed up. They include Two Secure Incorporated, McNaughton Development in Burr Ridge, Signature Bank, Insure With Us, The Elevator Consultants, Harding's Heavy Equipment, Palatine Complete Dental, AmericanEagle.com, Cafe Salsa, and many more. What these businesses understand, and you should as well, is that per those 40, 60-second commercials that Amy was mentioning, you reach a lot of affluent fellow entrepreneurs who have an appetite for political news that they're only going to get here, both nationally and locally. So it's a real opportunity to profile your business for potential clients.
Yeah, in 2019, we have a new Congress, a new governor in Illinois. This is the time when you want to jump on board and become part of the family and help needy children in the process. 40 60-second commercials as a way of saying thanks, and they'll run Monday through Friday right here from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. And again, it's a $2,500 tax-deductible donation. The money goes to Food for the Poor. So thank you so much. And call Ann Jeanette. If you have any questions, just call her, 847-472-8951.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Talking about that case, Marty Quinn.
Yeah.
Using Madigan's muscle to try to get his 19-year-old DePaul freshman opponent off the ballot by apparently committing criminal fraud, or criminal fraud being committed on his behalf. His defense to that is that his opponent is a Trump supporter, so anything goes. Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know what, Dan? Dan, this is a very disturbing story, and you mentioned fraud, but you know what? I think you're looking at fraud the wrong way, because if you consider this kid's 19 years old, he's a forklift driver, they might get, $15 an hour. Did he use his student loans or grants or whatever to finance his election campaign? That's who should be investigated. Have a nice day.
That's sarcasm. Yeah, thanks for the call, Ed. Right, exactly. It's not, hey, I'm not the one committing fraud. It's him. It's not me. It's him, right? All right, switching gears but staying local. This is an interesting story. SaveYourHomeNow.org. SaveYourHomeNow.org vignette. I'm trying to do more of these. And I know you might not care about the wealthy, but maybe you hope to be one day.
Well, I have a lot of friends who live in Barrington Hills, and I've been to each home is on, I think, 1.5 acres at least. And it's a beautiful neighborhood.
Well, this home is on 5 acres, okay. To Eagle Point in Barrington Hills. You know you're in a ritzy neighborhood when the addresses are single digits. To Eagle Point in Barrington Hills. Built in 1992, purchase price, $851,000. You know, the price to build one.
Right.
$851,000. That's $1.53 million in today's dollars. So, 2018 dollars, constant dollars, $1.53 million was the purchase price in 92. 9,614 square feet, 6 bedrooms, 8 bathrooms, 4-car garage on 5 wooded acres in the scenic Eagle Point subdivision. The home sold recently, November 21st to be specific, for...
Oh my gosh. Let me guess.
9,600 square feet, 6 bedrooms, 8 baths, 4-car garage, 5 acres in Barrington Hills. And the purchase price was...
Oh my God, I don't even want to know. Do I want to know?
$1.2
million?
$800,000.
In Barrington Hills? In that subdivision, and the kids go to Barrington High School, which is a great high school.
That's interesting you point that out, because $1.53 million is what they paid in constant dollars 27 years ago. $800,000 is what they sold it for, so that was cut in half. Oh, during those 27 years, they paid $723,000 in property taxes.
Oh, my gosh.
So they... To live in Barrington Hills over the last 27 years cost them approximately $1.5 million. Is that worth it to send your kids to Barrington High School?
No.
Well, this is the calculation people should be doing.
I mean, it's a great school, but it's not that good.
This is the calculation people should be doing, really. I mean, this is what you think. Oh, well, I don't mind the property taxes because good schools.
Yeah.
Okay, are they that, right, to
are
your
they
point?
Are they that good?
Are they this good, right?
Are the hallways lined in, 14-karat gold?
You would think. By the way, the property tax bill, and this is a difference between the reporting that the newspapers I'm a part of do, NorthcookNews.com is where I'm providing this information. The Chicago Tribune story on this, the sale of this mansion, didn't even include any mention of property taxes. That's the whole thing.
That's the whole point of this.
How do you have a conversation about the sales price without the context of the real return or negative return on the home sale plus the underlying reason, you know, property taxes? Their 2018 tax bill, $27,477. That's 3.5% of their sale price.
Much was it? 27?
27 grand, 3.5% of their sale price, which is more than 3 times the national average. Property tax is a percentage of home value. Their property tax bill peaked in 2014 at just under 40 grand, about 5% of their sale price, and that was just before they listed it for sale.
That's insane.
$1.5 million in lost equity, effectively, and property taxes paid. 9,600 square feet, 6 bedrooms, 8 baths, 4-car garage, 5 acres, wooded subdivision, $800,000 in Barrington Hills. And the funny thing is, I'm sure the people who bought it think we got such a deal. And
when they sold it in November?
I will say again, the people who bought it.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm
sure they're saying, we got such a deal. Look at this deal we got for $800,000. In point of fact, you're just the next one to get fleeced. But, I mean, think about this. And $1.5 million hit over 27 years. I mean, there are people that buy homes that are less than their annual salary, even at this in this rarefied air, so they can take the hit. But what's happening as illustrated by this story in Barrington Hills, is happening everywhere. This is everywhere. So can you take a 50% hit if you're trying to scrape together a retirement and you live in Glendale Heights? If you live in Villa Park? If you live in Grays Lake? Pick a middle-income suburb. Can you buy a house for $250,000 and sell it for $125,000 and just say, ah, c'est la vie? Most people at that price point can't. So I just go back to say, your home, your job, your pension. Which is the first you would like to give up to stay under this status quo? Because one of those things is going to be liquidated to finance big government. And then they'll move on to the next and the next. So that what you'll have is Illinois mirroring San Francisco, but as a state. Champagne socialists, insulated from terrible public policy, who can take the hit and want to stay on the board of the Lyric Opera and the Goodman, and so they're going to stick around. And people who are the beneficiaries of transfer payments and not much else in between. But okay, you know, continue to buy the I'm going to send a message to Trump rhetoric, because you're really showing him, aren't you? I'll tell you what, I'm going to send a message to Donald Trump.
I want to hear that soundbite again.
By destroying my house. I'm gonna have the government liquidate my house to send a message to conservatives like Proft. You got me. Hey, Tom in Deer Park.
Hello, good morning. I heard, Amy, you mentioned that you knew some people in Barrington Hills.
Yeah.
I can't say that I knew the people that sold it or that bought it. But what I can say is that there are some listeners and people that contribute to the Illinois Policy Institute and espouse the good work that you do on your show and that they do on their website. And maybe, just maybe, the people that sold this place got a hold of some of that literature and said, let's empty out Barrington High School. We're out of here. So nice work, Dan. Thanks.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Tom. I mean, it's just one of those things where this is the math is inexorable. The math is the math.
Well, people think our property taxes are high in Chicago. I think they're a lot worse in surrounding suburbs.
Well,
I was shocked to hear what my sister pays in property taxes. And where?
Arlington Heights. Yeah.
Well,
right, because in the suburbs you don't have...
The house is bigger, but still it's...
Well, you don't have commercial subsidizing residential, which is what you have in Chicago. But let me tell you something. The glory days weren't always that good. But also they're coming to an end in Chicago, because I think the next reassessment under Fritz Kagi, where there's going to be some probably more honest assessing, as if that's not a paradoxical statement. But in terms of the Tribune series and, frankly, the series we did that talk about places like the West Side and the South Side, where you've got poor communities that are at 10, 8, 10, 12% of property value, property tax rates, that's going to get normalized. And, the result is going to be the half a dozen revenue-producing wards in the city. And that's the way we should look at this, because we just exist to finance government overlords, right? That's how we...
Right, we exist to pay their paychecks.
Well, that's what we like. We want all... The only real reason we're here in Chicago and Illinois is to be revenue agents for the state. All we are is sources of revenue for the bosses in Chicago and in Springfield, and I repeat myself.
Well, is there any escape? I mean, is Niles, because they have a lot of factories in Niles, is that a reasonable place to live? Or Schaumburg, because of Woodfield Mall, Elk Grove Village?
Schaumburg doesn't work. Doesn't work. It's not enough. Rosemont, you know, where you got 3,000 residents and 15,000 employees because of the airport and all the business and so forth.
I mean, State Arena, everything.
There'll be pockets. There'll be little islands where it's not as bad. But you can't run this system and sustain these salaries and benefit levels without liquidating people's homes, because that's where the money is. There's only so much you can do with you know, trying to finance government through vices, trying to, you know, kind of pickpocket people through red light cameras and other gimmicks.
Well,
there's only so much
you
can do.
I mean,
legalized dope. There's only, but I mean, that's the vices thing. There's only so much you can do, though.
Well, now the PlayStation tax. Did you hear about that?
Well, sure.
There's a 9% amusement tax.
Yeah.
On my kids' PlayStation.
Yeah.
But yet, if they play it in Arlington Heights or anywhere else, there's no tax.
Well, it's Chicago, so this,
it's unbelievable.
It's the cloud tax, right? So it's PlayStation, the streaming services, right?
And Sony fought it for a while, then they just gave up. Like, why'd you give up?
The bag tax, water tax, but there's only so much you can extract from that. You got to go where the real money is. And so what's the payday for your local school district? It's $27,000 a year from one house. It's $750,000 over 2 decades from one family. That's the payday. So we'll just continue to liquidate these fixed assets. That's where the money's at.
My friend just recently sold his house because he was paying $51,000 a year in property taxes.
Yeah.
Well, you got rid of that juggernaut, and now, I mean, somebody else is stuck paying the bill now.
Well, you have to put that in context. What do you sell it for?
$3 million-ish.
Yeah, well.
So that, I mean, that makes sense, but I'm just saying that's a lot of money to give to the city of Chicago.
Well, right. That's where the money is. So this state, I know the majority of people, not everybody, but the majority of people, per their votes, have said that they don't care about the state and their local units of government liquidating their homes. And that's fine. But some people are going to try and get out from underneath that beforehand. And so just FYI for your ignorant neighbors, you might want to tell them that it's going to be liquidated faster than they think.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer
on AM 560, The Answer.
Let's continue to think about that question, the Barrington Hills story. Barrington Hills is a good high school. Hey, hey, the argument, we pay high property taxes, but it's for our great schools. Okay. Is Barrington Hills worth $1.5 million over 27 years, which is $55,000 a year, or $220,000 for the 4 years your kid's going to go to Barrington Hills? Is it worth
Barrington
that?
High School. Yeah, no. It's not that good.
Greg,
you'd be better off at Hersey High School.
Of course.
Well, I mean, we are conference rivals.
Of course.
Yeah.
I wonder if Barrington Hills or Barrington High School thinks they're conference rivals. Greg and
no,
Jefferson
we
Park.
Beat them.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know who can afford in Chicago to pay all this stuff? City workers.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a friend who's a cop who made, I checked him out the other day, $160,000 a year or last year because of all the overtime he's getting. And, of course, his wife is a teacher. You know, I'm up in the 45th Ward, and, you know, even though we got John Arena, the idiot, two out of the three candidates running against him. One works for the Parks Department making $90,000 plus, and the other one is a fireman who also, on his days off, works as a special ed teacher with CPS. So he's getting a fireman's pay, getting paid by CPS, and now he wants to be the alderman, too. It's just, it's ridiculous, man.
Thanks for the call, Greg. You're right, but unfortunately, we appear to be in the minority.
Holidays. Oh, it's right around the corner. You know, Christmas is 2 weeks away.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, maybe, you know, with the Business Benefactor Program, let's open it up to public sector workers.
Hey, hey.
Just advertise whatever government agency you work for since you're the new millionaire class.
Call Anjanette right now. No, call Anjanette Natowski, 847-472-8951, if you want to become a business benefactor. Why would I? Well, if you make the marketing decisions or you own a company and you want to reach like-minded customers, you want to advertise on this station. $2,500 tax-deductible donation. The money goes to Food for the Poor. And it was a way of saying thank you, welcoming you to the AM 560 family. We give you 40 60-second commercials that will air here Monday through Friday. Dan could voice your commercials. I can. Joe Walsh can. Or you could voice your own commercials. But to find out more information and to sign up, because people are filling up slots quickly. People such as Two Secure Incorporated. Who else? Matthew Hickey Law. Insure with us. The list goes on and on. Call Anjanette, 847-472-8951.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, House Majority Leader, soon to be House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy on CNBC's Squawk Box yesterday, talking about the sentencing memos released on Friday, all the discussion over the ensuing 3 days. Here's McCarthy's take.
What did Schiff say before any investigation started more than two years ago? That he had proof. He has no credibility on either side of the aisle when it comes inside the House. If you hire an attorney to deal with your issues, you assume that attorney is going to follow the legal bounds. If this is a campaign finance problem, how are members going to look at themselves as the number of their own problems of campaign finance, which is normally a fine? Are they going to leave office? I think it's a hyperbole of what they're doing. But what's going to happen here is their base is so ginned up that are they going to be able to control themselves in this process? But there's nothing there that it's impeachable. From my standpoint of view, if they went down that road, they would lose for
politically,
they would lose as well. Everything they've laid out. I think, builds the case that there's nothing there. You've had the House, you had the Senate, you've had Democrats on site say there's nothing there. They want something to be there, but there is nothing
there. As far as Russia.
Yeah.
Well, right. I mean, I think at this stage, you have to be a fairly tunnel vision partisan, like Adam Schiff or Jared Nadler, to believe you've got much in the way of evidence to support some sort of criminal activity associated with Russian collusion, at least based on what we know from what has been publicly released. But there is this other issue of the Southern District of New York, which we discussed yesterday, and we reviewed Andy McCarthy's comments over the weekend, his sort of bombshell comment that he expects Trump to be indicted based on his reading of the sentencing memo that emanated from the Southern District of New York as it pertains to these hush money transactions.
Yeah, they said that in court that the payments were made to Daniels and McDougal in coordination with and at the direction of Mr. Trump.
President Trump tweeting yesterday, Democrats can't find a smocking gun.
He meant to say smoking.
Tying the Trump campaign to Russia after James Comey's testimony. No smocking gun, no collusion.
He's consistent, okay?
That's because there was no collusion. So now the Dems go to a private transaction, wrongly call it a campaign contribution. Let's get the take of one Andy McCarthy, the E.F. Hutton of the Legal Commentariat. And I'm not talking about as copy editor for Trump's tweets. I'm talking about legal matters. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
All right.
Let's see if we have the smocking gun, I guess.
Yes. Do you agree with Trump that there is no smocking gun with respect to Russian collusion?
Yeah, well, I would have been shocked if there were. I really think that what's happened here is we've really been led on a wild goose chase, which, I hate to be a broken record on this. I don't mean to make people's eyes glaze over and close their ears with the legal esoterica, but the reason I thought it was important at the beginning here that there was no criminal investigation assigned to Mueller, that he was given a counterintelligence investigation, is they needed to identify the crime that he was allowed to look at in terms of Russian so-called collusion in order to have any hope of keeping this investigation finite and with defined parameters. And what they should have assigned to him, because this was the allegation that rationalized this whole thing, was there a conspiracy between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin to hack Democratic email accounts, this cyber espionage conspiracy that is discussed in the FISA affidavit, for the FISA warrant. If they had done that, I think what you could have justified saying is, there wasn't probable cause for that at the beginning, but at least they gave him something definitive to investigate. That conspiracy obviously isn't there, and he could have closed the investigation. Instead, they gave him a counterintelligence investigation, which is just an information gathering exercise, and he got to continue to investigate until he found something. He still hasn't found a crime, but we've now moved the goalpost from the original claim that they conspired to hack the election to what I think they're now moved on to, which is that the Russians tried to infiltrate the Trump campaign. They had several agents of influence who were in and around the Trump campaign, and Trump people were irresponsible in dealing with them. I think that's where they're going. Even if they could prove all that, it's all very interesting, but it's not a crime.
But what about campaign finance laws that were broken? Did he violate them in directing hush payments to Stormy Daniels and McDougal?
Yeah, Amy, I don't think so. You know, I wrote this thing over the weekend, and I got some stuff back saying, you know, what are you doing to President Trump? It's kind of like, you know, it's like the weather guy says that it's going to rain today. They, you know, like you're in your house trying to make it rain, you know. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is looking at what they're doing there sure looks to me like they're planning to indict him. And I can go through the reasons why with you if you'd like. I don't think there's a campaign finance violation here. I don't like the campaign finance laws for constitutional reasons. I don't think they should ever be handled as criminal violations. I think it's much better to deal with them as a administrative fine. But if you're going to get down to it as to whether this is a crime or not, I don't think it's an in-kind contribution. And the way I would try to frame that for people is this. What they're saying is that these non-disclosure payments, and by the way, non-disclosure agreements are completely legitimate. They're very common in civil litigation. What they're saying, though, is that these non-disclosure payments for these private arrangements that that Trump made or that were made on his behalf with these women, they're saying that because of when they happened and the circumstances under which they happened, they're actually campaign expenditures. And therefore, he had to disclose them under the campaign finance laws as if they were regular contributions. And what I say is, well, let's turn that around. Let's say that Trump assumed that they were campaign related because of when they happened in the campaign calendar. And as a result, he said, I think what I'm going to do is take campaign funds that have been donated to my campaign and use them to pay these women off. What do you think the Democrats would be saying if he had done that? What they would be saying, of course, is that he illegally diverted campaign funds for his own personal expenses.
Well, right.
So it seems to me, it seems to me that they get him coming or going, right? And that can't be a crime when they have you in that kind of a, where if they put you in a situation where no matter what you do, they're going to say that you violated the law, then what we essentially have is a kooky system that should not have anything to do with the criminal law.
Well, their case is so weak with respect to not only what you're describing, which is, as the Washington Examiner sort of colorfully analogized, by that logic, by the logic from the Southern District of New York, every dime Chris Christie spent on diet books, Stairmasters, and bariatric surgery was a campaign expenditure. You know, if it's all about whatever influences the election, well, I'm going to get in shape because I'm running for office. Well, that influences the election, so you have to report it. The other thing, though, is even the timing of the disclosure in terms of impacting the election would have to have been disclosed before November 6th. And if I'm remembering the timing properly, it wouldn't have been necessarily had to be disclosed on FEC reports until after the election. But even even beyond those issues, doesn't the Southern, to your point about you think Trump's going to be indicted based on the rhetoric in the Southern District of New York's offering, doesn't the Southern District of New York U.S. attorney have to get sign off from justice to move to indict the President of the United States or anybody else for that matter?
Yeah, I must say, under the circumstances, I would think that they would have had to get sign off to charge these counts against Cohen. And, you know, because Mueller was clearly involved, which means Rosenstein, who is deputy attorney general, is involved. I would think they would have had to gotten sign off with respect to him. But yeah, sure, they would have to get sign off from the Justice Department. You're assuming that hasn't already happened, right?
Well, I'm assuming that hasn't happened, and I'm also wondering what William Barr's perspective is going to be on this.
Well, if it hasn't already happened, I would imagine he'll get to weigh in. If he analyzes it as a strict legal matter and he hasn't been forced to make any commitments or induced to make any commitments in his confirmation hearings about whether he's going to have any involvement in that case or not. I imagine he'll look at it, and I hope if he looks at it as a straight legal matter, he will at least say that even assuming for argument's sake that this is a crime, if we look at precedent here and we look, for example, at the 2008 Obama campaign where there was a $2 million campaign finance violation, nobody doubts that these actually were donations, unlike the Trump thing where there's an issue about whether it's an in-kind contribution or not.
Right.
But in the Obama campaign where there were these $2 million worth of campaign violations, they allowed them to settle it by a $375,000 fine with the Federal Election Commission. And that the way this ought to be handled at best is that the Justice Department should stay its hand and let the Trump campaign work it out with the FEC.
Well, let's play it out the other way. Let's play it out your scenario that there's been sign-off. He gets indicted. Then what happens?
Well, he couldn't be indicted under current Justice Department guidance until after he has been after he's out of office.
Right.
So you can't indict a sitting president. Now, I've always thought that that was flawed advice, I must tell you, because that protection is not supposed to give the president any advantage that you or I wouldn't have with the criminal law. It's simply supposed to make it so that he doesn't have to deal with criminal proceedings while he's president. But here's the problem. There's a 5-year federal statute of limitations on most crimes, including these alleged crimes. If he weren't to win re-election, he wouldn't be out of office until 2021. I guess this is a 2016 offense. Yeah. They probably still have a few months. But if he won re-election, the statute of limitations would have lapsed.
Well, could you indict him?
I've always thought the guidance.
Could you indict him and wait?
Well, that's what, according as I understand the guidance, you couldn't, and that's why I think the guidance is flawed. I think you should be able to indict under seal, which stops the statute of limitations from running, and then unseal it when he gets out of office. But that's not what the guidance holds, at least as I understand it at the moment.
Now, there's a busy day today. Manafort may face new charges today. Mike Flynn files his sentencing memo seeking no jail time. And tomorrow, Michael Cohen is going to be sentenced in New York, in your former Southern District. How much time do you think he'll get behind bars?
The judges tend to go along with what the prosecutors recommend. I think here his guideline range was something like 51 to 61 months, and they recommended a slight shave off that because of his cooperation with Mueller. So I think they're saying something around the neighborhood of 42 months. That's probably what he'll get.
I want to get to your I know you're friendly with him, Jim Comey, since he testified again on Friday. James Freeman's write up in the Wall Street Journal. He describes Comey as presenting himself as unaware and incurious regarding one of the most consequential investigations the FBI ever conducted. He described how little he knew about the federal government's use of its surveillance powers against associates of the presidential campaign out of power, and assured lawmakers that the investigation was free, of course, of political bias. That's consistent with what Matt Gaetz, the congressman from Florida, who sits on the Judiciary Committee, he heard the testimony, talked about as well, Jim Comey's selective amnesia. I mean, if you're a top lieutenant of incoming Attorney General William Barr, do you say, you know, as a matter of course, and, you know, the concepts like equal justice before the law, whether House Democrats want to continue these investigations started by House Republicans or not, we have a duty to go back and look at what happened in 2016 on the other side of the House, the presidential administration, as well as the senior leadership of the FBI, not to mention the Clintons.
Yeah, you're always responsible for keeping your own house clean, regardless of whether Congress is having a look at it or not. But I guess with respect to Barr in this particular time, I think the inspector general is looking at that and is going to be issuing a report. And what I would want to know if I were Barr coming in is, you know, number one, exactly what is the inspector general's warrant? You know, what precisely is he looking at? And then secondly, what I'd want to know and what we have very little information on is This guy from Utah that Sessions appointed, Huber, what has he been doing? You know, exactly what has he been looking at? Does he have a grand jury? What's the status of that investigation? What's the ambit of it? So I'd want to know all of those things. And then I would consider whether there were any sort of holes that needed to be filled, you know, things that were slipping through the cracks that we needed to investigate. But I think he should start with talking to the IG and Huber and find out exactly what they've been up to.
Yeah, I'd like to know about that referral on McCabe, too, where that stands. He's Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review, one of the preeminent legal minds and commentators on all of these topics. Andy McCarthy, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. No smocking today.
No smoking guns. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thank you to CMT Research, Twin Supplies Company of Oak Brook, Signature Bank, Chris Jacobson Associates, Century 21 in Algonquin, McNaughton Development in Burr Ridge, the Angler's Outlet, and many more businesses who signed up for our Business Benefactor Program to help us reach our goal this Christmas of providing food for a year and water for life for 3,000 children in Haiti in conjunction with our Food for the Poor partner.
And what these companies have done have really taken their business to the next level. What they have done is donated $2,500. It is tax deductible. All of the money goes to Food for the Poor. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you 41-minute commercials that run Monday through Friday right here, prime time on AM 560, The Answer. If you're thinking about doing this, now is the time to act. Spots are filling up quickly, and you want to get in on this. I want you to call our sales manager, Anjanette Natowski. Call her directly at 847-472-8951. That's 847-472-8951. And ask about the Business Benefactor Program. Also, you can just go to 560theanswer.com/food or search for the keyword food. And she will, again, be there to answer all of your questions. It really is. I mean, think of Tom Sedeka. And I know there's a long list of others who began as business benefactors here. And now they're doing well. They're living in Barrington Hills.
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the things that, for now.
Trying to relate the stories.
For the property taxes in Barrington Hills, that's how well he's doing. But one of the things that we're good at doing here is just who the community is, connecting business to business, entrepreneurs, productive risk takers. This is their home because they're news junkies, because they follow politics, they are concerned about public policy. So they're producers, and so you want to connect people, good people, to other people in their various sectors, and that's one of the things that we can do at this station that few others can.
And we, again, thank you in advance for your generosity, and again, any questions, call Anjanette, 847-472-8951.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer. Hey,
hey, hey, hey. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. How about this idea? Women-only sections on planes. Female-only sections on planes.
No, I'm all right.
Because of all those snakes on the planes. You know what I mean?
Hey.
In separate incidents in August, two men were arrested and charged with abusive sexual contact that occurred during flights headed to SeaTac. Groping women while they're asleep.
Yeah, remember that guy in Detroit, too? They're on their way to Detroit Metro, and he put his hand up her shirt. Really, women like that. That's really a good move.
Yeah.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Women-only sections. I don't know.
Do you want to hear this one?
Oh, yeah. Let me hear it. What happened?
Babak Rezapour is the alleged assailant.
Really? What did Babak do?
One of the victims fell asleep on a flight in January after taking a prescribed anti-anxiety medication.
Oh, that will knock you out.
And consuming two glasses of wine.
Oh, that'll
really knock you out.
She claimed that when awakened, Reznapour was assaulting her and concealing his actions from his other passengers with his jacket. Laboratory tests showed that his DNA was found inside her underwear.
Oh, Dan, gross. Gross, gross.
I wanted to make the case for women-only seating. The FBI revealed in June that investigations related to sexual assault on flights increased by 66% from 14 to 17. Now, Elaine Chao, she's one of...
Mitch McConnell's good-looking... better half.
One of the China people, according to
China
Mr. Blankenship from West Virginia. Cocaine Mitch and the China people. Elaine Chao, of course, Mitch McConnell's wife, Transportation Secretary, unveiled the National In-Flight Sexual Misconduct Task Force to examine current practices employed by airlines and blah, blah, blah.
This is why I have an emotional support dog fly with me on a plane. Nobody's touching me anywhere or sick 'em, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bunky will attack.
Well, Kate Whitehead, penning a piece for the South China Morning Post.
China.
Okay. Titled, Man Spreading on a Plane. In the age of Me Too, even the armrest is a gender politics issue.
Oh, I always take over the armrest. Mm-hmm. But I only take over one. You can't have both. You can only have one.
She writes, I dream of a future in which there are women-only seating sections on planes. Most women intuitively understand that the armrest is neutral territory and leave it as a slim buffer between them and their neighbor. I'd be prepared to campaign vocally for pink rows.
Pink, ugh.
Women, you know. But I suspect airlines wouldn't be a favorite because that would be mean. That would mean other rows full of men, and that wouldn't work because, you know, we're animals. And so what about that? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I mean, we've tried some, you know, sort of air flight experiences geared directly towards men, like the Hooters planes.
Oh, yeah. That short-lived airline. It flew in and out of Gary, Indiana.
You did?
No, they did.
Oh.
No, we had a flight attendant and another radio
station. Did you take a Hooters plane?
I didn't go on the
Never
flight.
Took
it was
Hooters
to Fort
plane.
Lauderdale from Gary, Indiana.
Well, so what about that? Women-only seating, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
And I fly a lot, too. I sometimes enjoy the company of men more than the company of women.
Do you?
Well, because you know what, too?
Do you get chatty?
They know how to shut up. Like, I don't like to talk. Sometimes I will talk for a little bit. But then I shut it down. You know, I shut down the conversation and read my book or watch a movie or tend to my dog. But with women, a lot of women don't know how to be silent. They don't know how to be still. And
they sit next to me because they immediately recognize this person is unapproachable and a little scary. And I probably shouldn't talk to them.
So
I've never had a problem on a plane.
Never?
No.
Do you ever talk to anybody on a plane?
No.
Really? Never? Mm-hmm. Wow.
If somebody tries to initiate conversation, I just turn slowly and stare at them without saying a word. And then I hold that for about 15 seconds until it becomes uncomfortable. And then I turn and look out the window.
Oh, yeah.
Because I got to have a window seat.
You know what? More so than women only seating, they should have children only seating. Because I got to tell you, I'm sick of kids sitting in first class. It's ridiculous.
Well,
and they're loud. Well, but here's the thing.
Well, who tends to the children if they're all seated together?
Well, once you're up on a plane, it's not, you know.
What?
When you're on a plane, they have the men do it. It's in a section in the back. Take care of your kids.
So now the men have to sit in their own section and take care of the kids in their own section?
Yeah, you're darn right. Because you know what these kids are doing these days?
They're never going to fly. What man is going to buy a flight on that seat on that flight? Are you crazy?
You know what kids are doing, and parents are allowing this. Everybody, all the kids, if you see this, they all are staring at screens, Dan, but without headphones. So there is a kid on a plane just listening to watching some cartoon without headphones on. And I'm like, no, that's noise pollution. And can you imagine if everybody on this plane did what your child was doing?
You know what?
And you know what? The mom looked at me and she said, well, he can't wear headphones. I said, no, he's going to have to wear headphones. Flight attendant. Can you please make this child put put on headphones.
You know,
I'm not kidding you because this is what's going on. And in the line too, I said, your son's screen time is bothering me. It's making me anxious, and I would like for you to put headphones on him.
You know what I've also wondered? What if everybody on the flight had like a phony baloney documentation so they could bring their animal on the plane and so that every row was filled with animals?
Oh.
Did you ever wonder that?
I have high blood pressure and a heart condition. And I want you to know something.
I didn't say you, so somebody has a guilty conscience.
Bunky on a flight once to Jacksonville, we were sitting next to this woman who had pancreatic cancer, and she could not have enough blankets on her. She was so cold. And you know what Bunky did? Bunky got up on her. And so, oh, my God, I'm going to cry.
Oh, my God.
Bunky got Bunky, up on her.
Yeah, the hero of Flight 452 to Phoenix.
He warmed her heart.
I can't wait to watch this on the Hallmark station.
And warmed her body. And she was crying. She was so happy.
Oh,
she's like,
God.
Thank you so much. And he brought her so much peace and love. He's really, or she, whatever.
Yeah.
It is the most beautiful dog in the world. And so well-behaved and just a lovely creature. So I think you should leave Bunky alone.
Oh, my gosh.
Tales of Bunky.
Bunky's boring.
Hey, Bunky's been on 32 flights so far.
Save it for animal stories. We'll get to that later. Bill in Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. Listen, you know, how far do we take this kind of stuff? It's a woman's only flight, a man's only flight.
Yeah.
So what if there happens to be a devil's advocate portion here? The guy wants to get on a woman's only aircraft. He identifies as a woman. Where do we stop this game?
Well, obviously, thanks for the call, Bill.
In this culture,
whatever you say you are, so that the dude who identifies as a woman gets on the women's plane, right?
Well, there's women's sections, right? I don't think we're going to have all women.
Why not?
Because.
P-Hat Airlines.
P-Hat.
And you'd have the little P-Hat on the, I don't know about that.
Well, you're going to draw the P-Hat on
the
nose of the
logo.
Plane.
Or you could have it like a scene from Airplane. You could have it like actually like on.
On top of the,
cockpit, outside the cockpit. That would seem appropriate. Never mind. Ron in Plainfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan. I think I'm going to get on board with this women-only airline, but I think we should take it a step further to just protect the women from harassment and have men's-only golf courses and maybe no women in the NFL locker rooms because they're kind of criminals and no women sideline reporters just to protect them. I'm thinking about that and have our own hashtag movement, but because I'm a compassionate conservative male.
It's very forward of you. Thanks for the call, Ron. It's very thoughtful.
I don't think so.
Here's a little news.
There are already men-only golf courses.
Yes.
You know, Bobolinks, right? What? I don't know because I can't go.
I don't want to disclose the four in the Chicagoland area because
there's four of them?
Yes. I don't want to disclose them because I don't want you and your Lakeview friends to
storm
bother
place?
People. But let's just call them as a group. You know what? Let's just call the four courses.
Well, come on. Let's just
four courses that are men only.
We're adults here. Bobolinks.
Chicago Metro. We just call them heaven as a group.
Oh, my gosh. Still, my favorite story is when one of those golf courses, somebody had a heart attack and a female EMT showed up and they wouldn't let her on the property.
Get out.
Yeah. And I hope that person died.
And you know what he did? Died with a smile on his face. Saying, this is the way I want to go. It was not the rest. Rest of that story is.
Did he live?
The guy having the heart attack said, "Get her out," because he knew
he knew
it was either she leaves or she saves him, and he can never go back to the club again.
Keeping out an EMT.
Go out on top.
He deserves to die. I mean, please.
Bruce in Bloomingdale.
You know, maybe we should just completely resegregate society. We can have separate but equal schools. We can have separate drinking fountains. We can have separate entrances because apparently that's what the people want. So we should give it to them good and hard.
Thanks for the call, Bruce.
Well, you're going to get it.
I like where you're going with that. But here's the thing. I didn't even think gender mattered anymore. So I'm so confused. Cindy and Joliet.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
Good morning.
So Amy.
Yes.
With regards to the first-class kids that are creating havoc, don't you realize how much more expensive it would be to fly the nanny with the family?
That's true.
Yeah, sure. That's true. Thanks for the call.
But they should have an age limit if for first class. I really think so.
Why?
Well, if you put your kid in first class now, what do they have to look forward to when they get older and they get their own jobs and they can make more money so they could put themselves in first class? I just think it's...
What?
No, I just think they're spoiled. They shouldn't be so spoiled.
So exactly.
Respect your elders. Excuse me, three-year-old whose feet is dangling from the seat anyway. Yeah. I think you should give your seat to me because I'm right. An elder.
And then the mom will lean over to her three-year-old and say, "Don't worry, Johnny. That's just a bitter, envious old woman. Just pay her no mind. She never got to sit in first class." Matt in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey. A number of years ago, my friends and I tried to join Curves, and we were told we couldn't because we were males. But nowadays, I suppose all we have to do is relist our genders as unknown, and we should be allowed to join Curves then to go work out and lose weight, I suppose, right?
I like it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, man.
Remember Women's Workout World? And they would not let men in. Remember that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going
to... You tried to get in to the Palatine location.
Yeah, right.
If you're in the strip mall there.
If you're going to invade our golf courses, then the least we could do is invade your yoga classes, make you feel real uncomfortable. just a bunch
of... Just stare at you when you're doing the down dog. What kind of position is that? How does that make your head feel? Is blood rushing to your head?
Remember when they tried to do sue for... sexual discrimination, Hooters.
Oh, yeah, Hooters, yeah.
And Hooters did this brilliant ad campaign showing these, like, disgusting hairy men in the Hooters girls' outfits.
Yeah.
And they ultimately won. They pushed back, and good for them. Maybe we could do that, like, at Women's Workout World or Curves or whatever, just, like, have a bunch of hairy, grotesque men eating,
Joey
like,
bag of donuts
sausage
could show up.
Sandwiches while you're in spin class or something. How about that? Just leering at you.
Okay, gross.
Well,
fine.
Exactly.
Fine, you take your male-only golf course, and I'll take Curves.
Let's give the P-hats a taste of their own medicine.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
'Tis the season for giving, and we are... close to reaching the finish line in our annual Food for the Poor campaign, where we are trying to provide food for a year and water for life for 3,000 children in Haiti. And I know you've heard me talk about this, but I went to Haiti back in 2017 to a small village, Savan-Cabritz. And because of your donations last holiday season, within 28 days, that's it, they were able to put in a water filtration system that will provide clean water for life for people in this village and provide new homes.
Yeah, this is like an important part of the discussion here is what Food for the Poor does. 5-star charity navigator rated. 95 cents of every dollar goes to the beneficiaries, the intended beneficiaries, their clients, these folks, families in Haiti. But the key is sustainable solutions. So it's building that infrastructure that you're describing that you saw. So that you're putting families on a path to some independence because they have food and a clean water supply.
Yeah, and the people there, the Haitians, are so grateful for every, even a dollar donation. They are so appreciative and just loving people. And if whatever anything we do to help, we should, especially during the holiday season. And also, the Business Benefactor Program, the best deal in Chicagoland Radio, where you could... elevate your company. You could, if you've ever thought about advertising, this is the time to do it. Why? Well, here's the deal. $2,500 tax-deductible donation. The money goes to Food for the Poor. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you 40 60-second commercials that will air right here on AM 560, of course. If you want to reach like-minded customers, this is the place to be. This 2019 is going to be exciting. There's a new Congress. We're having a new governor in Illinois. We want to keep this station going, and we need your help. Anjanette Natowski, she's the person to call. Her phone number is 847-472-8951, 847-472-8951, and ask about the Business Benefactor Program.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I want to get to the tumult in Western Europe, but let's start just because this just came over the transom. Jamal Khashoggi, Times Man of the Year.
Yeah, Jamal Khashoggi, Times Person of the Year. It's not Man of the Year now, Dan.
Whatever.
Person of the Year. And basically, there's a group of journalists whose work has landed them in jail or cost them their lives. So Khashoggi's on one. There's another group of reporters called The Guardians on another cover of Time magazine. But basically, it's honoring journalists.
CNN.
Who have
Don
suffered.
Lemon. Is Don Lemon
Don
included?
Don Lemon is not. Sorry. But foreign journalists.
They're not including journalists who have been made fun of by Trump. I'm shocked.
I know. Well, President Trump was on the short list. So was Robert Mueller. So was Stormy Daniels, believe it or not. The one that I wanted Meghan Markle. Because this is the only time in our lifetime that an American would become British royalty and marry into the royal family. I know.
That could be the only choice worse than Khashoggi and these journalists. I mean, I'm not talking about journalists that are in prison. But the media is just all so self-regarding. Because Khashoggi here. I mean, how many weeks? Look, I'm sorry the guy got murdered. Okay,
well, and brutally, too. That audio tape came out and the bone saw noise and people are putting on music through their headsets so they didn't have to listen to it. Yeah, it was gross.
Yeah, okay.
It was.
I'm sorry he got murdered.
Yeah.
How many weeks is this going to go on? President George Herbert Walker Bush got 5 days. How many weeks are we on Khashoggi?
I think this is seven.
There's a really good piece in The Spectator, too, by Joseph Dugan, who is a speechwriter for Bush 41, and then also for the president of a Saudi-owned oil enterprise. So he spent about half a dozen years in Saudi Arabia. What I learned over lunch with the real Jamal Khashoggi, Joseph Dugan. It's worth checking out because the sanitizing of this guy, the turning him into a journalist post-mortem. He had a few op-eds in the Washington Post after fallout with the royal family. And now all of a sudden he's some crusading journalist, a Woodward and
he's
a Bernstein,
martyr.
Except
yeah.
He was martyred. Yeah, right. Writes, Khashoggi had been assigned to establish Al Arab, a new Saudi-controlled television news network that was intended to compete with Qatar's enormously successful Al Jazeera. It was to be headquartered in the island country of Bahrain. In placement in Bahrain would be for greater ease of doing business, Khashoggi told me, writes Dugan, explaining that expat personnel and interview subjects would be much more comfortable living in, traveling in and out of the more carefree conditions of Bahrain. Formerly an independent client state of Saudi Arabia. In Bahrain, women drove cars and went unveiled and also did even naughtier things. Wine and liquor flowed on the island, too. You know, the hypocrisy of it. But here's the key. In 2000, and Khashoggi...
Wasn't he part of the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, that's an issue. He also writes, though, where's this section I want to get to? Khashoggi's entire career in Saudi Arabia, Dugan. I'm quoting. When he was not working directly for the head of fearsome national intelligence agency, involved writing, editing, and broadcasting for media enterprises owned or controlled by the government and members of the Saudi royal family. All of his writings and utterances, no matter how nuanced they may have been calculated to appear or sound, were completely controlled by strict Saudi government dictate and censorship. This is how effective influence operations work. Yeah. So that paragraph about Khashoggi from somebody who actually knows a little bit about what they're talking about rather than the news readers on CNN regurgitating the narrative they've been told to spew. And he's Times Man of the Year. And he's somebody that we're supposed to reorder our Middle East policy over his murder. I mean, again, I'm not excusing MBS and his assassins. I'm not promoting anybody being murdered for any reason, political reasons or otherwise. But I mean, seriously, this national D.C. press corps obsession with Khashoggi?
Well, Khashoggi, it's called the Guardians and the War on Truth. That's the person of the year. So they're Khashoggi's on one. Khashoggi's on one. Wallone is on another. And then the staff of the Capital Gazette, the surviving members, remember that paper was targeted and four journalists and a sales assistant were killed. So then another cover is them.
How is that the war on truth? I mean, I guess this guy didn't like their reporting on him, but it's not political in nature. And Khashoggi, as the lead here, the war on truth, he was an instrument of the Saudi government. That was his career.
The Saudi government, and then they killed him. Yeah.
But the war on truth.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, honestly.
They said Time selected the group for, quote unquote, taking great risks in pursuit of greater truths for the imperfect but essential quest for facts that are central to civil discourse.
They're not even good writers. All right, moving along to Western Europe. We've got May postponing the Brexit vote and Macron trying to postpone his political demise. Why don't we start with May? Because if you think it's a little bit pointed in this country, our political discourse, you think the president and members of Congress communicate in a way that's beneath the dignity of their offices. Have you ever seen the rough and tumble of Prime Minister Questioning Hour in the UK? This is fun stuff. Theresa May making the announcement that the vote will be postponed.
We've now had 3 days of debate on the withdrawal agreement, setting out the terms of our departure from the EU and the political declaration setting out our future relationship after we have left. I've listened very carefully to what has been said in this chamber and out of it.
She's a real cut-up, that May. Yeah.
To what has been said in this chamber and out of it by members from all sides. From listening to those views, it is clear that while there is broad support for many of the key aspects of the deal...
Not a laugh track.
On one issue, the Northern Ireland backstop, there remains widespread and deep concern. As a result, if we went ahead and held the vote tomorrow, the deal would be rejected by a significant margin. We will therefore defer the vote scheduled for tomorrow and not proceed to divide the House at this time.
That is the way to get things done, huh?
Yeah.
And nobody was sitting down. Did you see all their lawmakers there standing up like, yeah.
And then it got into the interplay between PM May and MPs, like this Labour MP.
Mr. Speaker, 9 times the Prime Minister assured us that there'd be no early general election, and still it happened. As recently as this morning, her hapless, ever-changing band of ministers were out on the airwaves assuring us that there would be a meaningful vote tomorrow before this latest twist, this sort of premature parliamentary ejaculation that has put the lie to the claim that she sticks to her guns.
Wow. That's strong.
When she won't even tell us when the vote is deferred to, and it appears that the lady is for turning, how can we or anyone trust anything she says again?
I'm tempted to say to the Honourable Lady, if she looks carefully, I think she'll see that I'm not capable of a parliamentary ejaculation.
Oh.
It's like a Monty Python skit, the two of them. So just in terms of, you know,
holy
administration's in trouble, Macron in Paris and May in the UK. Now think about Trump and the consternation and conflict and controversy in this country. Gives you a little bit of perspective. Things are rough and tumble everywhere. So that's May. And one of the things before we get to Macron. Does
he have a premature?
Was it a question?
Yes.
Given the sentencing memos that were released on Friday, the issues with trade, with border, budget shutdown, you hear from Trump on campaign rallies or campaign rallies, obviously during the election cycle. What do you think about a Trump national address from the Oval Office?
Oh, to address all these issues?
Yeah. You think it's time for that? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Button down scripted, not campaign rally, button down scripted from the Oval Office face to camera, speaking to the American people about all of these issues amid the transition of power from Republicans to Democrats in the House, and what that portends.
A primetime speech in the Oval Office addressing these issues.
Yeah.
That would work for me. I would love to hear. I mean, I know that we know how he feels through his tweets with smocking guns.
Yeah, that's not. But that's not.
But that's different.
Yeah, that's not. People gather around and you hear directly from him in a coherent way over the course of 20 or 25 minutes addressing with some specificity all of these topic areas.
Well, the Southern District of New York came out, saying that he, under his advice or his guidance, what was the exactual word? That he directed Michael Cohen to pay off Stormy Daniels and McDougal.
Yes.
But he's always denied that, saying, I had nothing to do with it. That was my attorney who had.
The sentencing guy, first, it doesn't, I mean, okay, regardless of the substance, the idea is that, yes, that's a whole topic area. The Mueller investigation, the people around him, it would be interesting to have him comment on that. Perhaps halfway through his first term, some reflection 2 years in, and maybe some admission, like not exactly like offered, but some demonstration of reflection. This could have gone better. I learned from that, and okay. So charting this course that will necessarily be new in the new year because you have a divided Congress. I think this is a pretty good time for that kind of speech. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. And I am not talking about the speech that Macron gave, because that was an example of what the French do generally, which is surrender to pressure. This was, please don't throw me out of office. This was like Jimmy Swaggart. I have sinned. Forgive me. Give me another chance.
To me, it was like, please stop rioting. Please obey order. Because people are canceling trips to Paris. People are not going out shopping during the Christmas time because it's chaos there.
Yeah.
437 people arrested, 142 injured over the weekend.
And they
still protested yesterday.
And he came bearing gifts as he needed to. Mm-hmm.
After 40 years, a malaise has emerged of workers, of villages, neighborhoods where public services have been diminishing, where living conditions have deteriorated. People feel they are not being listened to. Changes, deep changes, new lifestyles which adversely affect our society. And this exists, and it exists today. Of course.
The interesting thing, too, is as you listen to this, just think about this in the modern context of American presence and how much of Macron's rhetoric and, frankly, with respect to socialists in this country, his policy gifts to appease the hordes sound like what an American president would be saying. A lot of American politicians are saying in the modern context. That should be concerning to you. Macron continued about the source of his legitimacy in the wake of this populist revolt.
If I have fought to change the political system in place, the habits, the hypocrisies, it's precisely because I believe above all in our country, and I love our country. I believe my legitimacy isn't based on a title, a party. My legitimacy comes from you and you alone. Many other countries are also experiencing a difficult period, but I deeply believe that we can find a way out of this crisis all together. I want this for France because it is our calling. Through history, we have always shown the way. We have opened up new avenues.
Well, yeah, okay, sort of. And then it was the time to present the gifts.
Yes, what's in it for me, Dan?
He's got all kinds of goodies.
There is an economic and social state of emergency, I decree. We want to build a France based on merit, hard work, where our children will live in better conditions than us. This can only be achieved through apprenticeship, better schools and universities, training that will teach the younger people and less young people how to work, investment in school and training, schools and training. We want a France grants where people can live in a dignified way from their earnings. We have gone too slowly. I want to intervene quickly and in practical terms in this area. I ask the government and parliament to do what is necessary so that people can live in better conditions from their work. The salary of workers will rise by 100 euros per month from 2019 onward without costing anything more to the employers. Extra work should generate extra revenues. Overtime should be paid without taxes and without charges. And I want a real improvement be perceptible. That's why I will ask all employers who can to pay an end-of-year bonus to their employees.
Oh, really?
Which will not be taxed and will not generate any social charges.
Wow. Salary increases, tax-free year-end bonuses, and a little something for the retirees, too.
Retirees are a precious asset. Those who are paid less than 2,000 euros per month, we will cancel the tax increase that we had planned.
There you go.
How about it?
Yeah, because they were going to tax pensions. It wasn't this just a fuel tax. That's what they're planning on doing now. It's all gone now.
We'll see.
But how can he decide whether a company has even the revenue or the money to pay year-end bonuses?
What's the difference between that? Doing that by government fiat and setting wages by government fiat. What's the difference?
They're both fraught with danger.
Will that satisfy the gilets jaunes? The yellow vests? I don't know. Macron the gilets jaunes.
But after he gave his speech, they were still protesting.
Yeah.
The yellow vests.
Well, they haven't done the math yet, see if it's sufficient. But this was, make no mistake, this was an anti-tax revolt in Paris. James in Elmwood Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes.
Hello, James. James? I think we got a bad connect. Oh, yeah, okay, go ahead, James.
I'm okay, I'm here, I'm listening.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that Trump is long overdue to give a speech from the Oval Office. It should be a weekly speech, not just once a year. Because I think more people need to hear directly from him as opposed to hearing the interpretations of CNN and MSNBC and 100% bias against Trump. If they hear it directly from him, maybe we can make a little progress with some people's attitudes about Donald Trump.
Thanks for the call, James. I agree with you, and I don't think this needs to hear directly from him, not in tweet form, directly from him. 15, 20, 25 minutes, face to camera, prepared remarks, covering a range of topics, serious business.
And if he made a mistake, show some contrition.
Yeah.
And show how you're going to move on from that.
Yeah. Rich and McHenry.
The country needs it right now.
Hey, Rich.
This is Rich. Oh, hi. How are you?
Good.
I agree with what the last guy said. I agree with what you said. I just know right up front, I mean, doing one speech like that, the media is going to portray it as a I'm not a crook moment.
Well, thanks for the call, Rich. Yeah, maybe. I mean, it could also portray it as a checkers moment, depending on how good the speech is, if you want to make Dixonian references. But I don't think he has to, you know, I mean, again, the quality of the speech would matter. I think you cover not just that issue. I think you cover a range of issues, including economic issues. It's not just all about Mueller's investigation and the documents that have been released and the people that have been pled guilty. I wouldn't limit it to that. But, you know, you're always going to run in. I mean, obviously, the D.C. press corps are antagonists. They're the mouthpieces for the left. Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, good morning. I'd love to see Trump do a primetime scripted, not off the plantation, the rails kind of speech. But first, I would like, especially regarding all this Russian Mueller garbage, release all the documents, declassify them, get them out there, and give us a time to, digest them. And, you know, regarding France, I've worked in France, right? Outside of every factory in France where they have their dumpsters, there's a little in case of emergency, but it's not a fire extinguisher. It's a little tube of accelerant and a flare so they can roll the dumpsters out in the street and start them on fire.
Thanks, Ralph.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Become a business benefactor. Be like one of the cool kids. $2,500 tax deductible donation. The money goes to help those less fortunate this holiday season and actually all year, all lifelong. Helps people, helps food for the poor. And they help people in Haiti and the Caribbean and Latin America. $2,500 tax deductible donation. The money goes to food for the poor. And we will give you 40 60-second commercials. Anjanette, she's the one you call. Call her at 847-472-8951. Again, that's 847-472-8951.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, the issue of Second Amendment rights. They're going to be under assault, so to speak, by the left at every level, Chicago, Illinois, federally. That's a big part of the agenda. You saw it on your television screens this campaign cycle about people being in bed with the NRA, the hysteria about being complicit, literally. These were the allegations against Republican legislative candidates in the Chicago metro area. Allegations they were complicit with school shooters. Seriously. So you think they're going to tamp down the rhetoric now that it's proved successful, thanks to the ignorant members of our electorate who actually buy that nonsense? And look, it cowers a lot of people. And so John Rich, who's a country singer, he's with Lone Star, Big and Rich.
I'm familiar with his work.
He, responding to his colleagues, Dierks Bentley, Florida Georgia Line, some of the big country acts who've folded in with gun control groups, promoting gun control groups online and elsewhere. John Rich cutting a video for Fox, offering this.
Right now I'm in New York City, and back in Nashville is my wife and my two little kids. And if somebody breaks into my house, Which rifle would you suggest I tell my wife to grab? Which one should she grab? The one that gives her the best chance at protecting her and my kids, or the one that doesn't? Which one should she grab? Those are the kind of questions I would like to ask them. Once you start moving in that direction, someday you could actually see that happen, where somebody literally knocks on your door in the future and says, Mr. Rich, we're here to purchase all your weapons back. I go, my weapons are not for sale. We're going to purchase them anyway. This is where this can lead to. And so these artists that say that, by the way, I'm friends with all those guys. I've written songs with all those guys. I've toured with all those guys. I respect all those guys. But if they're going to say that, give us some kind of a solution. What do you think we should do?
Well, they have the solution, and he just referenced the Eric Swalwell proposal, Democrat from California, who wants to run for president.
Oh, he's going. Yeah, he's going to run. Sure.
Mandatory buyback of weapons that he decides need to be confiscated by the government. And I think Republicans don't do a particularly good job of getting out front on this issue and making the case. You have these horrific mass shootings and people get scared. And you know what? When you make decisions from a place of fear, you invariably make the wrong decision. Yeah. But you have to present something so that people are not afraid. People make intelligent distinctions between the law-abiding and the criminal. They make intelligent distinctions about what is possible and what is dangerous utopian claptrap, the left. World without violence, all we do is confiscate the guns. And so I just wanted to recall stories that don't get told enough, that are quickly forgotten, where the school shootings are not. Like the heroes in Sutherland Springs, Texas. Do you remember that shooting?
I'm sorry.
Church shooting?
Oh, the church. Yes, yes, yes. And the guy came, who had a assault rifle, didn't he? He came in and blasted the shooter.
26 people murdered.
Oh, my gosh.
That's 7% of the town. small town, Texas. How much amplification did this get as compared to, say, Parkland? And why, do you think? The man who stopped the shooter and by engaging him, forced him to flee the scene. There's two men, actually, but Stephen Williford is the main guy. He grabbed his AR-15 out of his home, ran out to confront the shooter. Stephen Williford recalling at the time how it went down.
All I want to stress today is the people at that church. They're friends of mine, their family. And every time I heard a shot, I knew that that probably represented a life. I was scared to death. I was. I was scared for me, and I was scared for every one of them. And I was scared for my own family that just lived less than a block away. I'm no hero. I am not. I think my God, my Lord, protected me and gave me the skills to do what needed to be done. And I just wish I could have gotten there faster. But I didn't know. I didn't know what was happening.
So again, with John Rich, which rifle, which weapon would you have told Stephen Williford to use? He grabbed his AR-15. He ran to the church. He confronted the shooter. There was a firefight. He ran to a truck, stopped at a stop sign, asked the driver to help him stop the shooter, who had a history of domestic violence and been kicked out of the military. Remember that story?
Oh, yeah.
The military not doing particularly good record keeping when it pertains to individuals discharged who have a record of violence or discharged because they are violent and communicating with local and state and federal law enforcement. World without consequences just by taking away the guns, really? And how much profile has Williford or this story gotten since it occurred? It's a year ago. It's all. It's a year ago. A little over a year ago.
And how long was Parkland? How long ago was the Parkland shooting?
This year. I mean, how many... Well, why aren't we telling these stories? Why aren't we reminding people of these stories the same way they get reminded of Parkland at all of these rallies underwritten by celebrities and country music stars like John Rich's friends?
Parkland was almost a year ago, February 14th, 2018.
Yeah, right. This was November of 2017.
Wow.
Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
People want to refer to Parkland, but they forget that the police officers stood outside while the gunshots were ringing out.
That's right.
And people were dying while he stood there doing nothing but saying, stay back, stay back. I have this to say about those who wish to confiscate all the guns. Take a look at what's going on in France over the fuel prices being raised. $1.5 billion in damage, 30,000 people on the streets. You try to take away someone's constitutional right to bear arms, and you will start a civil war 100 times worse than you see on your news right now in Paris, making you gasp. It will be the ugliest thing in America since the Civil War.
Thanks for the call, Dan.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Well,
all right,
you
time for
me.
Animal stories with Uncle Nan Lamy. Oh. Apologies to Larry Lujak.
I think I should go first.
Tell us about Andrea Gaylord's dog, Amy.
Well, she had two of the dogs, Madison and Miguel, and they're both Anatolian Shepherd mixes. Probably butchered that. Hope I didn't.
It's a big dog.
They look like, yeah, they kind of look like golden retrievers on steroids. But she had a nice home in Northern California, and it was part of the Campfire fire in Paradise. You know, remember, 85 people died, and that fire displaced thousands of people. Well, homes went up quickly. So as soon as her house became engulfed with flames, she had to get out of there. And she couldn't rally to get her dogs in the car because, you know, they're territorial, and they're there to protect property and homeowners. And she had to leave, and that was a month ago. So she had a volunteer named Shayla Sullivan, who was with this rescue organization, and she helped locate Mikkel, who ended up in a different city more than 60 miles away from the house. So they found Mikkel, but they couldn't find Madison. She had driven by the house a few times. She thought she saw Madison in the canyon. So she put out food and water every day, Dan, for the past month. And lo and behold, Madison was there, and he was protecting the house. So they finally get
to the house that wasn't.
Right, where the house used to be. And they finally pull up to the house, and there is her precious Madison.
There's our dogs waiting. And you are the best dog. The best.
I love you. Because he hid. He was listening.
I mean, he's the best. Imagine the loyalty of hanging in through the worst of circumstances and being here waiting. It was so emotional.
And Madison said, "Where the hell were you people?"
Come on. This house. Yeah. And it was really
sweet. Oh, sure. Leave me behind.
It was really sweet. After he ripped her face off? No.
Yeah.
It was really sweet because Madison and Mikkel saw each other for the first time in a month, too, and their tails were wagging, and they were sniffing each other's butts. You know what dogs do.
And he said, "You like Mikkel better." Oh, Mikkel gets to go with the family. No. Madison's left behind.
Mikkel wore the pea hat, and Mikkel ran 60 miles to a town where he was just fine. He ran away from the fire, where Madison stayed there, survived the fire, and protected where the house would have been. So congratulations to them, and I'm hope they have a happy life together.
It's not the best dog. Hayek's the best dog.
No, Bunky's the best.
That is a great dog story, though.
That is. I mean, then you see, because he looks anybody a little emaciated.
Anybody who doesn't like a dog, that's a story that tells you why you're wrong.
Yeah, and that breed is to protect, you know, their territory, so good.
All right, I got an animal story.
It's not going to be better than mine, but go ahead and try.
You know the funny names when they get married and the announcements are in the paper? Like,
Oh, I've got one.
Go ahead.
My producer at Channel 5, her name was Risky, and she married a guy named Lay, so it was a Risky Lay. And it was a Risky Lay.
I don't get it.
Oh, you don't be a prude. But it was on Jay Leno, and I'm like, "Jennifer, here's your picture." Oh, wait, because I got back late. I go, you're on The Tonight Show, because she was a Risky Lay.
Sure, like when Wang and Holder, Anna Wang and Brad Holder got married.
Oh.
Or
Wang Holder? That's a good one.
Yeah. Or when
I thought this was an animal story.
Or when Kellyanne Long got married to Eric Paul Wee Wee. I'm a grade schooler. I can't help it. But here's the animal story, Amy, the
yes.
Connect. This wedding invitation went viral because of the itinerary for the wedding. Starting with the ceremony at 3 o'clock, then attendees are invited to enjoy some horse ovaries at 3:30.
I'm sorry. Did you say horse ovaries?
Horse ovaries at 3:30.
I didn't know that was apparently edible.
Apparently they have President Trump's copy editor for his Twitter account because, of course, they were trying to spell hors d'oeuvres on the invitation, and instead it was horse ovaries. Which I believe actually goes well with a nice glass of Dom.
Or I get it, hors d'oeuvres.
You didn't know how to spell it, hors d'oeuvres, so you didn't.
No, I know how to spell hors d'oeuvres.
How do you spell it?
Hors d'oeuvres, and then.
Yes. And now we also found out why you washed out of that spelling bee in sixth grade.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever been to the Turkey Testicle Festival?
No, I
haven't. In Auburn? That's a good, you should go. I mean, it's a real thing. So after Thanksgiving and all those turkeys get killed, they keep their testicles and they bread them and they deep fry them and you buy them in a cup. It's called the Turkey Testicle.
You could have
Festival.
like an exotic animal charcuterie board, like turkey testicles with horse ovaries. Nice glass of wine. I'll have to talk to my friend at Glenn's Tavern about that, see if he can get that on the menu.
Turkey testicles?
Yeah.
And horse ovaries. You can help feed those less fortunate, not with that kind of food. But we're trying to reach our goal this year, providing food for a year and water for life for 3,000 children in Haiti. Here's what you do. Make a one-time donation. Go to 560theanswer.com/food. We're asking for $80, but whatever you can donate would be very much appreciated. And we also have that beautiful exciting, one-of-a-kind business benefactor that Dan Prof's going to tell you all about. Who's signed up?
Well, we got many businesses signed up, including Signature Bank, American Eagle, Cafe Salsa, Spiegel and Cahill, Attorneys at Law, and Sure With Us, Elevator Consultants, CMT Research Foundation, the Anglers Outlet, many more. Make a $2,500 tax-deductible donation to Food for the Poor. And in return for your generosity, we offer some of our own in the form of 40, 60-second commercials to promote your business on our airwaves during primetime hours, weekdays 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. You call our sales manager to enroll, Ann Jeanette, 847-472-8951. 847-472-8951, and Ann Jeanette will take care of you.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, coming to you live from the Chestnut Tree Cafe in Orwell's 1984. Under the spreading chestnut tree, I sold you and you sold me. Ink sock alert, brother John Cass, fellow prol, has ID'd a dangerous prol. The good news is not to worry, prols. Madigan's Ministry of Love is on the case. But if you see him, please do turn him over to the Ministry of Love. His name is David Krupa. He's a 19-year-old DePaul freshman who was working his way through college driving a forklift part-time. He made the mistake of filing to run for alderman of the 13th Ward against Marty Quinn. Marty Quinn is a Madigan apparatchik, and Mike Madigan's the head of the 13th Ward Democrat organization, in addition to the Democratic Party of Illinois, in addition to the Illinois state government.
What other wards is he a Democratic committeeman over? That's strange. I mean, I know he ruled, but he's Democratic committeeman, 13th Ward.
And then he's state party chairman.
State party chairman.
Yeah. And Mr. Krupa filed 1,700 signatures, which is almost four times, more than four, well, four times the number you need, 473, you need to get on the ballot. But the organization, the Ministry of Love, was dispatched to put together more than 2,700 revocations. These are legal documents where people sign saying, I did not sign this petition. All right, so just follow this one more step. So he files
1,700 signatures.
1,700. There's 2,700 people who signed an affidavit saying, I didn't sign this signature. And then when you do the matchup, only 187 of the 2,700 people actually signed Krupa's
real petition,
nominating petitions.
All right.
So what you have is
fraudulent behavior,
mass criminal electoral fraud. So what is one to do about this? Well, Marty Quinn was asked, what's the deal with that? What is the deal? Because, of course,
Marty,
you're being represented by Mike Casper, who is Madigan's consigliere. So you understand sort of this criminal family tree. Think about it this way. Mike Casper is to Mike Madigan what Bruce Cutler was to John Gotti.
Okay.
What Tom Hagen was to the Corleone family. Do you get it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's Marty Quinn. What the real issue is, it's not this criminal fraud allegation, obviously.
So I guess the better question is, as a self-described day one Trump supporter gets 1,700 signatures in the 13th Ward without being disingenuous? That's the question that comes to my mind. Have a good day, guys.
And he walks away. He called David Krupa from day one a Trump supporter?
I don't even understand what that means. So, number one, you don't have to disclose every person that you've supported when you're circulating petitions. So I don't know what, and being disingenuous, even if that were the case, and I have no idea. I'm sorry, that's not a crime. So I'm running for alderman. Would you sign my petition to help me get on the ballot? That's what candidates do. And then somebody signs it. Marty Quinn, just this is, but this is the one name. All you have to do is utter it, and it's complete absolution among Chicago champagne socialists, machine hacks, phony goo-goo liberals. Trump.
Well, but I am sure that there are some Trump supporters in the 13th Ward. Honestly, but that's not neither here nor there. For him to say that is. It's a scapegoat. It's
absurd.
Cheap. It's cheap and it's stupid, and everybody can see through it, we hope. But David Krupa was just on WGN TV, and, you know, they asked him who's responsible for this.
I don't think that any alderman, except for maybe Ed Burke, has the organization to do what they've done to, you know, my candidacy and everybody else who's run in the past 30 years. I think it's the 13th Ward Democratic organization that's headed by Mike Madigan. He's been the Democratic Ward Committeeman there since 1969, and he would be the only person in the state to pull off something like this.
Here's the thing about this case. I mean, I hate to see Mike Madigan have this problem as we're celebrating his 50th year as being the Ward Committeeman. We're right on the cusp of it. I mean, he's ruining the anniversary.
Oh.
You know, these snot-nosed kids that don't respect people who have given half a century of dedicated public service to this city and the state. Ed Burke, 50 years. Mike Madigan, 50 years. You know, obviously, I'm assuming people in Chicago agree with me. This snot-nosed kid needs to be put in his place. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Who would like to volunteer with me to do some binder check work for Tom Hagen, a.k.a. Mike Casper, and the Corleone, a.k.a. Madigan family down in the 13th Ward to make sure this Krupa doesn't upset Madigan's 50th year, Marty Quinn having, you know, this nice aldermanic position. Obviously, if he's with Madigan, he's a good guy.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah.
Right?
Well, this poor little 19-year-old who's not even old enough to drink, goes to DePaul, works as a forklift operator. He's been getting threats.
There have certainly been threats, a lot of threats. Some of them you could say that they're on my life. I've gotten messages over Facebook. I've gotten my precinct captain actually threatened me a couple times. So
the precinct captain, what did he say? I mean, that's a...
Well, I was actually going door to door to my neighbors because they had gone door to door previously telling them not to talk to me, don't sign anything. And I just wanted to let them know I'm not going to get you in the middle of this. He found me on the third house from the corner. He pulled up in his truck and he got out and he says, you know, Dave, you got a real bright future ahead of you. You're a bright kid, but man, I'd hate to see something bad happen to you.
Yeah.
And then when I asked him to clarify, he says, no, nothing. I just don't want to see you get hurt. So I filed a police report the day afterward. I wanted a paper trail because that's the only way to deal with the machine.
Yeah, do you think they're intimidated by a 19-year-old kid running against...
Well, you know, they say that everybody says they shouldn't be. As a 19-year-old kid, I'm an underdog, you know. But after having no competition for 30 years, any competition, even a potato, is probably, you know, probably intimidating to them at this point.
Well, I mean, look, a potato has a higher IQ than most of the city council, so you could understand why they'd be a bit set back by that.
A little jumpy.
I think after this young man is sent to the Ministry of Love, Madigan's Ministry of Love, I think it's time for a little visit to the Ministry of Truth after that. He's saying some very dangerous things, and I don't like it. He's making me afraid.
Are you uncomfortable, dude?
I just want to be with the proles.
I want to go campaign for him.
I just want to be back with
Krupa.
My... Oh,
Krupa.
Yeah.
Krupa. Krupa.
Okay, now you've done it, Winston Smith. I have nothing
Krupa.
To do with her.
Krupa.
I just want to go back to my little cubby hole and watch my Ink Sock sponsored screen for the truth.
Krupa, Krupa.
Dan and Wilmette, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, wait till they plant drugs in his house and he's a drug dealer.
Thanks for the call, Dan.
You know what? That would be a concern. Remember the woman, that young
lady? We don't know.
Who ran against Mike Madigan? Remember her?
We don't know he's not a drug dealer.
Oh my gosh! Please leave this poor kid alone.
Hey, I'm not. I'm just like that precinct captain. I just don't want to see him get hurt.
Remember, though?
I don't want to see him to get arrested for being a drug dealer because maybe he is. I mean, that, you know, nobody knows.
Oh, okay.
We live in an accident-prone society. You never know when you're going to walk out your front door, get hit by a grand piano. You know, sometimes kids make mistakes. They get involved in bad things. I mean, I'm just setting up.
Well, he better watch himself when he starts his car. Yeah. But back to the young lady that ran against Mike Madigan. She was Hispanic. She got her tires slashed all the time. Her brother got arrested. I mean, it was insane what they went through.
Well,
she eventually dropped out.
Michelle Pizer.
Is that her?
Yeah. She's one woman ran, Jason Gonzalez. I mean, these people were not qualified. They weren't dedicated to public service. They weren't dedicated to the betterment of Chicago and Illinois the way that your Madigans, your Burks, your Cullertons, your Hineses, your Strogers, your Dailies. You need dedicated public servants. You can't just have, you know, the hoi polloi out there thinking they can be an office holder. Is that the kind of society you want to live in? Or do you want to live in this Xanadu that's been created by those wonderful public servants, starting with Speaker Mike Madigan? All of your friends are supporters of Mike Madigan's. All of you in the suburbs who vote for your local Democrat legislator, member of Congress, statewide office holder, you're Madigan supporters. So I'm just trying to fold in with the Ministry of Madigan Love. What's wrong with that? And why shouldn't David Krupa be forced to do the same? Why should he get a pass? George in the 13th Ward.
Yeah, hello. I live in a 13th Ward. My name's George. And the young man's also a Fenwick grad. I reposted something from Fenwick on my Facebook page just about it because I have friends and family that went to Fenwick. And I received all kinds of unusual messages from people about this young man. And, you know, 19 years old, hey, let's give it a shot. And I could say that for one, that I was a Trump supporter. I still am in the 13th Ward.
Okay, George.
George, be careful starting your car now.
George,
after you made the submission.
I think I hear a knock at your door. George, you may want to answer that. Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. George and Moni, the other George.
Hey, Dan, is it true that when they asked Pritzker about that potato, he said, hey, you're going to eat that?
Thanks, George. Steve on the South Side.
Hey, good morning. You know, isn't Burke in charge of all the lawyers? I hope that's the underlying reason why the feds raided his office. Because you know Lisa Madigan ain't going to do anything about it or investigate it. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Dan and McHenry.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to say good on this kid for putting his hat in the ring at that age. I know I would never have done that, and I got to say I respect that.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Dan. I think you meant to say putting his head in the ring. It's going to be more than his hand.
I'm concerned about his safety. Oh. I'm concerned for his safety.
The Madigan Ministry of Love will take care of that.
They better keep their paws off him.
Sean in Elmwood Park will not be accepting comments on President Bush 41, but go ahead otherwise.
Do you want to know something? This is the price. I have a daughter at Fenwick, and I have a complaint. They make them too cerebral, because what this kid doesn't understand, this is a gangster. You're going up against the mob, baby, and it's open and notorious. And this is the kind of scum that would threaten a 19-year-old kid, a fat slob in his Ford F-150 that he's never made a payment for. But you did. This is what they do to protect it. And I'll tell you the other thing. The people who sit complacently by, you're scum in the 13th Ward. And you voted for Madigan your whole life because you were told to. You don't have a tenth of the courage this kid has. You're nothing. And all of you guys want to be tough guys. I wish this kid grew up in my era. Because when we were 19 years old, you threatened one of us. You threatened all of us. And let's see how many of these old fat slobs could handle these kids.
Thanks, Sean.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
All right, we're closing in on our goal to raise the money to feed 3,000 Haitian children for a year and provide clean water for them for life with our Food for the Poor partners. in our 2018 campaign. I want to focus on the business benefactor program because we really need donor leadership from the entrepreneurial set. And we want to thank those who've already signed up, including Insure With Us, Harding's Heavy Equipment, the Elevator Consultants, the Anglers Outlet, McNaughton Development and Burr Ridge, Signature Bank, Palatine Complete Dental, AmericanEagle.com, Cafe Salsa, Spiegel and Cahill, Attorneys at Law, and many more. Amy, how can more businesses get signed up?
You know, Dan, I'm glad you asked.
Thank you.
To become a business benefactor, it really, this is the best deal in all of Chicagoland radio. 40 commercials for $2,500. It's unheard of. And you want to hook up with this station, like-minded listeners, like-minded customers, future customers. What we're asking for is a $2,500 tax-deductible donation. The money goes to Food for the Poor. And we give you, as a way of saying thanks, 40 one-minute commercials that air Monday through Friday right here, 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. And to become a business benefactor, you need to call Anjanette. Anjanette, you can call her directly at 847-472-8951. Again, that number is 847-472-8951. Because poverty is a real problem in Haiti. And recently we had Paul and Todd Chapman from Food from the Poor come and they talked to us about the level of poverty.
Here's the deal. You have families that go 2 and 3 days, 2 and 3 days, not 2 and 3 meals, yeah, not 2 and 3 hours without feeding their children that have no food. Or imagine you're a mother and you could probably turn in several directions or maybe even go to a neighbor's house and get a pot of water, a jug of water to boil for a, maybe get, you know, give you, make a meal or clean your children or bathe them or give them something to drink. But you're talking about families, mothers, that are going to what they call, it translated, the gutter. It's a literal creek, if you will, green, very, very dirty and filthy. One end, there's children bathing. Another end, there's animals being watered and, quite frankly, relieving themselves in this water. And in the middle, you have a 12-year-old girl named Chauveline that has a bucket that she has to carry almost a mile each way. And she's done that since she was 6. And so that's what we're trying to help.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to note that this is a sustainability play. This is infrastructure building so that they're thus the water, clean water for life and then food for a year as infrastructure is put in place to help these families be sustainable, at least as it comes to the basic necessities of life, shelter, food, water. And so this is what Food for the Poor does, and this is what you help them do. 95 cents of every dollar we raise goes directly to those families and those children in Haiti. It's a highly efficient charity, does not work with the Haitian government, works around the Haitian government to deliver the goods to these families in need. That's why it's a 5-star Charity Navigator rated nonprofit.
So call Anjanette at 847-472-8951. And ask for the Business Benefactor Program.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and it's time to move from the oleaginous consiglieres of Trump's past, like, Michael Cohen, to a wartime consigliere in the White House, and he's having a difficult time identifying who that chief of staff might be to replace John Kelly at year's end, and there's all kinds of names being bandied about. I don't know. My favorite so far is probably Mick Mulvaney, because he's proven up at OMB.
Yeah, there's Steve Mnuchin's on the list.
Not a favorite.
Congressman Mark Meadows.
He's staying in Congress.
So it sounds like if you were offered the job, you would say yes.
Well, listen, there's a whole lot. You don't answer a question before it's asked, but I can say this, that because it's an honor, certainly I'm favorably inclined to at least have a discussion with the president.
Also on the list, Corey Lewandowski.
That's a joke.
Matt Whitaker, current Trumping acting attorney general.
Mm. Mm.
But then we heard Chris Christie. The big guy?
No.
The big fella?
I mean, it could happen, but I'm just saying, again, from that list, Mick Mulvaney makes the most sense to me. Our friend Larry Kudlow on Wallace over the weekend had this to say about outgoing Chief of Staff John Kelly and the relationship between President Trump and John Kelly as he prepares to depart?
Well, look, it's been a long 2 years for the chief, General Kelly. You know, he ran Homeland Security and has been running the White House staff. I think, by the way, he's been a very good chief. Very orderly processes in the White House. As you know, it's not an easy thing to do. General Kelly is a remarkable patriot. He has given such phenomenal service to this country. Perhaps it is time for a rest. President Trump at our senior staff Christmas dinner Friday night had some wonderful complimentary things to say about the chief. I heartily concur. So I suppose it's time to move on.
I don't think people care that much about the palace intrigue in the White House, but by the same token, personnel is policy. Your chief of staff matters, and so that selection matters.
And people wonder why President Trump tweets so angrily at CNN. Listen to how they described it this morning about Trump trying to find a new chief of staff.
Multiple sources familiar with the president's mood tell us he's super pissed at the process of replacing John Kelly.
And they had... Yeah. Super pissed on the Chiron on the bottom.
Those sources included, but were not limited to, Jim Acosta and Don Lemon. For more on this topic and, of course, the sentencing memos, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Andrew Klavan, podcaster, Another Kingdom, Season 2 is his podcast, and also, of course, a famed Hollywood screenwriter, including of the new movie, Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer, which you should see. If you have not, still available to see out here in Chicago suburbs. Andrew Klavan, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Always nice to be here. Thanks.
So what about the chief of staff position as the Trump administration is in a bit of transition?
Well, personally, if I were on the short list, I would be hiding under the sofa pretending I wasn't home. I mean,
okay.
I think it would not surprise me if John Kelly, a combat veteran Marine, now checks into the VA for treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. Trump has a chaotic management style, and it seems to suit him, and it seems to actually get some stuff done. But it can't be very pleasant to work with, and so it's going to have to be somebody with both a strong personality, but also an ability to meditate at a level of a Jedi warrior.
Isn't President Trump his own chief of staff? I mean, does he even need a chief of staff?
You know, there wasn't a chief of staff before. Truman, I think, was the first one to have one, and I'm sure that Donald Trump makes his own decisions about who can get in and who can see him in his scheduling. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. If it's not the position they can fill, he'll do it himself, and I don't think that that would be an utter disaster. I think that John Kelly really did seem to bring a measure of order and professionalism to the White House. I mean, I really do think he deserves the praise he's receiving. When you have to remember, I mean, this is one of the untold stories of the Trump White House. People don't tell it because they hate Trump so much. They're just so busy attacking him that he did come in an utter neophyte. I mean, he is really, I cannot think of another president who came in without the kind of political expertise that it usually takes to run these offices. His staff has gotten better and better. His cabinet has gotten better and better as he has shed the kind of some of them grifters, some of them just inexperienced philosophers who were the only people he could get to be in his campaign. And a lot of what we're seeing now is basically payback for the fact that he brought in these outsiders. He brought in anybody he could get. And I think that Kelly did a great job in kind of turning that around and making it a more professional White House.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you make a good point to sort of remind us to not get too swept up in the D.C. press corps propaganda. You know, his cabinet, and we said this as it was being formed, but, you know, sort of forget now, 2 years in, his cabinet was a strong cabinet. There are a lot of talented people that are cabinet secretaries that are bringing professionalism, advancing a deregulation agenda across these agencies, and that shouldn't be discounted. It's just that he's beset by these bottom feeders that he, you know, came into politics with.
Exactly. And not only that, of course, there's the fact that if you go against the leftist establishment, and it is now a leftist establishment, an administrative state that is basically run by the left for the administration of unelected power, for the exercise of unelected power. If you go against that, they're going to find anything they can about you, anything you've said or done. It can be used to make a scandal out of you. They chased Pruitt out of the EPA, and you know he was unwise to do some of the things he did, but yeah, it was basically a hit job to get the guy from stopping his program of deregulation, which is thankfully being continued now. But still, you know, it's a very dangerous position. If they came to you and said, oh, would you like to come over to the Trump White House and deal with this obstreperous president on the one hand and a murderous leftist media on the other, you might just think I'd rather, you know, work on an oil rig, basically.
Well, there's a busy day today. Paul Manafort's going to face new charges. Mike Flynn is...
You know, it's hard to say. I really don't understand. To me, maybe this is not a complete picture, but to me, I'm watching this, and I feel like none of the charges that are being thrown at these people have anything to do with Russia and Trump's campaign. Collusion is not a crime, so even if there was something where Trump's people were meeting with Russian agents, that wouldn't be a crime. So what exactly is going on here? I mean, we now have this leak to CNN that said that the FBI decided that the president needed to be reined in. Now, think about that for a minute. This is a law agency deciding that the president needs to be reined in. Their argument for starting this investigation of his campaign was that they were so sure that some Russian skullduggery was going on. They basically spied on a political campaign. They tapped people's phones. I don't understand why the criminal investigation has not turned the other way. I mean, now that the Republicans have lost the House, I don't think they're going to be able to investigate this anymore as effectively as they have before. But what on earth was going on here? I mean, everything we're hearing about, now they're talking about campaign finance violations. I mean, this is why the FBI invaded a political campaign, and they had the intention of reining in the elected president of the United States. This is a gross, gross violation of everything this country is supposed to be about. And to me, that's the story. And if our press were not so corrupt, we're not essentially a corporate arm of the Democrat Party, that would be the story. If it were reversed, if this had been done to Barack Obama or Bill Clinton, I think James Comey would be facing prison at this point.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
I am shocked by what's coming out. You know, it's not that I think Manafort is a sleazy guy who did some sleazy deals in Ukraine. I have no sympathy for him. It's not about that at all. And Michael Cohen is he's a New York type that I've always despised, these make-believe tough guys who go around spouting, you know, lines from third-rate movies, and then the minute they get in trouble, they turn state's evidence, you know.
He's a
typical New York character. I have no respect for them, and it has nothing to do with that. I'm not mourning that. I'm just saying that something genuinely awful went on here. The establishment led by John Brennan at CIA and James Comey at the FBI and maybe Rod Rosenstein at Justice, you know, basically invaded the political process on the basis of a Russian collusion theory that's not even a crime. How is there even a special counsel appointed when there's not a crime to investigate? That's what the counsel's brief is supposed to be.
Well, and I'll tell you what, with respect to the senior leadership of FBI, hopefully when Bill Barr becomes the attorney general, we'll have fresh interest in the inspector general's referral on McCabe and a look at 2016, both with the presidential administration as well as with that campaign on the other side. I mean, Cohen and Manafort are transparent scumbags. Yeah. James Comey, he is so, his unctuousness, his, you know, lack of intellectual curiosity when he's not remembering things that he doesn't want to be implicated. I mean, he is a disgrace, and what he's getting away with in full public view, I mean, is remarkable to me, just remarkable. And so this calls to mind a conversation we were having earlier in the show after reviewing the public pronouncements of Theresa May and Emmanuel Macron across the pond there. Is it time for President Trump to have a national address, not just on this topic, but, you know, sort of a midpoint, stop, look, and listen, where he addresses in a scripted way the range of issues confronting the country for the next 2 years, particularly as you have a House takeover by Democrats?
You know, I think it's not a bad idea. One of the problems that Trump has been his inability so far to really expand his base. You know, the kind of speeches he made during the midterms were powerful to a certain number of people, but they also were alienating to other people. There's lots of people in this country, even on the left, even among Democrats, who feel that border security is an important issue, but who heard an undertone of hostility and racism in the way that, whether rightly or wrongly, in the rough and ready way that Trump was talking that put them off. And I think this would be a good time for Trump to maybe come forward and even say, if he could find a writer good enough to write the speech for him, even say, look, I know I'm a rough and ready guy. I know I'm not the usual politician, but I have destroyed ISIS. I have brought the economy back. I have gotten rid of some stupid regulations. My Supreme Court picks have been good, you know, and here's the way what I see going forward in this country. I'm not sure that Trump has the political skill to do that. I mean, his skill has all been kind of instinctive. He's been kind of like the running back, you know, the Todd Gurley who just sees daylight and goes for it. And I'm not sure he has the kind of planning and patience to make that kind of speech. Oh. But I think it would be a good thing for the country. For
yeah, sure. But also, too, I want some contrition. I mean, we all knew that he wasn't the best husband because of his past behavior. Just come out and say, yes, you know, I've strayed in my marriage. Or just, I mean, honestly, that's what women want. Are you kidding me? Just we know what he did, and now the Southern District of New York proved it. I mean, they said that in coordination with and at the direction of Mr. Trump, those hush payments were made.
They haven't proved anything.
Well, that's what they said in their...
That's not proof.
But it's not proof, but that's...
Yeah, that's Michael Cohen's testimony.
But we all knew that Trump was a billionaire playboy.
Right.
I mean, this is what billionaire playboys do. This is what their defining characteristic is. They go around, you know, getting women who are much too hot for them, and because they're rich, you know.
Exactly.
And I mean, this is
exactly.
we all know that was
yeah.
his personality.
Yeah.
And
pretty much
and
sums
I
it up.
Thought, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like it's a little bit. Galling to watch the people who defended Bill Clinton, who has been very plausibly accused of rape, and they defended him and his wife, his complicit wife, for 30 years. It's very tough to watch them come after Donald Trump for doing essentially consensually sleeping around with women who liked his money, and then paying them off to go away. I mean, that's as sleazy as it's possible to be in my book. But it's not like it was a secret. It's not like any of us thought like, oh, what a great husband this guy.
Yeah,
we're electing this wonderful husband and father. You know, I don't think anybody thought that.
And even one of the women he paid off, she voted for him. I mean, she came out. It's like, oh, I love Donald Trump. I voted for him for president.
Yeah, maybe that speaks well of his sexual prowess.
I don't know. Oh, my gosh. Oh, God.
You're funny today.
I'm not going to. I have to get that visual out of my mind.
Well, you know, I mean, I just think I'm not the thing is, I don't want to be put in a position of defending Trump's character. His character has really been trashy as far as I can tell. He has done a great job as president of the United States. Yeah. And I think that is something that's a little bit hard to deal with, that a man who is not possibly, who can't possibly be described as a good man in any ways that I think of those things, has actually done a good job as president and, as far as I can tell, has not violated the Constitution as his predecessor repeatedly did.
Yeah,
and I think
that's a good point, too.
You know, that's a little bit of cognitive dissonance, but that's the situation we're in.
Before we let you go, and before I do this, I just want to get your okay. I was going to submit your name to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to host the Oscars now that Kevin Hart has declined to apologize. And I just wanted to make sure you're cool with that. Maybe see if I can get a Gosnell screening.
I think I'm the perfect choice. I you know, I saw that and I thought they should call me, you know, like,
yeah,
I'll never apologize.
Well,
for
they might
anything.
Not have a host at all. That's what they're contemplating, too.
How about a robot?
It's not going to make a difference because nobody watches the show anymore because they give the awards to movies that nobody's seen. So it really is the left eating itself, which is kind of fun to watch. But I actually felt for Kevin Hart. I mean, this is something that the left has been doing for decades, is destroying the careers and reputations of people who step off the idea plantation that they have created for their special identities, and even people who aren't part of their special identities, who just go against go against their, basically, their diktats. I mean, I was thinking just the other day of Justice Clarence Thomas, a man who came up from a very difficult background, the descendant of slaves, a guy who started out wasn't even speaking English as a young person. And he rises to be Justice of the Supreme Court. It's an epic American story. And HBO makes a movie about the woman who accused him of being a little rude, you know, who weaponized these kind of petty accusations against him to try and destroy him on political grounds. That's a horrific way to use the culture that the left dominates. The left dominates the culture, and they use it as a weapon. Kevin Hart, whatever you think of him as in his talent, he worked his way up from a very tough beginning to become a star in a very tough business, and they just shot him down for nothing, for absolutely nothing, for an untoward tweet that he sent years ago. I mean, it is just disgusting, this leftist domination of the culture and the people it destroys, the good people and the people who've worked so hard to get what they want. I just think it is an absolute disgrace, and I think that I wish that more people would stop and refuse to apologize, but also stand up and say, you know, we want Kevin Hart in there. Don't take him down. You know, so he sent out a tweet you didn't like. Why should that end his career? It's absolutely disgusting and disgraceful, and I really feel for the guy because, you know, I know how hard you have to work to get into that position. He said it was his dream job, and they destroyed him over nothing.
I like Pat Sajak's suggestion that the Academy Awards be held over 2 days. The first day is just giving out the awards, and then the second day you can have your political rally. Andrew Klavan, podcaster, Another Kingdom is in season two, screenwriter of the new Gosnell movie, Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer, at a theater near you. Andrew, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.